All glories to you, Sambhu Dvajis. All glories to you, Sambhu Dvajis. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. All glories to Sri Gauranga. Okay. Okay, so we're continuing on chapter 14 and verse 44 in the Shloka Anusharana. At least Yudhishthir expressed the Yudhishthir expressed the real anxiety perturbing his mind. Or is it that you are feeling empty due to having lost your most intimate friend, Lord Krishna? My dear Arjuna, I can think of no other reason for your having become so utterly dejected. Because all those points before, he wouldn't do. You know, not feed people and he'd eat alone, or not give shelter to someone who's approached him. He just wouldn't do that. It's just not the way Arjuna functions. He hasn't his whole life. So naturally, he would be dejected if he did that. So more it's kind of like just instruction. Narad Muni also uses this technique. You ask questions, and the questions themselves are instructions. You know, like, are you paying your, soldiers, at the proper time? Right? So that in itself is an instruction. So you should be paying your soldiers at the proper time. You know, are you protecting your citizens? You know, like this. So when when Narad Muni comes to visit Yudhishthir in Indraprastha after they first created the place, Then he gives a line, I don't know, probably could be like 30 or more questions. But they're all instructions on how to manage a kingdom, how to run a kingdom. Does that make sense? So here also we take these as that these are our instructions, right? In other words, you shouldn't overstay your welcome. You shouldn't not give shelter to people. You should always, share food if it's appropriate with those who should be included. Does this make sense? So like that. So the real point he's getting to is this, because he's saying all the other things first because he's hoping, even though he knows it's not, Arjuna would never do these things, but he's hoping it's one of these. Right? Because you start off with these, and if he says yes before that, great. Right? Does that make sense? But the difficulty is he knows it's this question. Right? That's the problem. So then finally, after saying everything else that could make a Kshatriya of character unhappy, despondent, he's already stated. So therefore he can understand, so it's nothing to do with this, it's to do with that Krishna is left. Does that make sense? So 4.3, Vritti, section 1. Question 20 of Srimad Bhagavatam is asked by Yudhishthira of Arjuna. There are three parts. Question 20, part 1. Since Arjuna had come from Dwarka, Yudhishthira asked after the welfare of Lord Krishna, his family in the Yadu dynasty. Because indirectly he's trying to find out if everything's okay. Because before this happened, we already know that he had already thought it's not okay. Right? He sees all these inauspicious signs. How could this happen if Krishna is present? So Krishna must not be present. He already has the doubt. So first he's asking, how is Krishna and everyone at Dwarka? Right? Hoping that he'll say, yeah, great, fine. Right? But he doesn't. Question 20, part 2. Receiving no answer from Arjuna, Yudhishthira then anxiously inquired about his brother's welfare. Right? So then, the next you come to him. In this section, beginning with verse 39, the king expresses concern that his brother's loss of luster may be due to discrepancies in the execution of his kshatriya duties, 39 to 43. Question 20, part 3. Finally, Yudhishthira asked, or is it that you are feeling empty? Jai ho, jai ho. Hey, show, hey, show. Or is it you are feeling empty for all time? Because you may have lost your most intimate friend, Lord Krishna. Right? So even here, he even alludes and says, might. He doesn't exactly directly say it. Page 4. 4.4 Vritti, section 2. The philosophical significance of question 20. 1. When a civilized person, or when a civilization or person is separated from Krishna, the result is inauspicious. Sufferings are inflicted upon the separated souls by the Lord's material energy. Summarized from purports 1 to 21. But beyond the material suffering is the spiritual world, too. There, infallible entities exist in wonderful reciprocation with the Lord. 3. Feelings of transcendental separation of the devotee from the Lord superficially appear to be suffering, but in truth, they are the evidence of perfectional attachment to Krishna. In his purport to verse 8, Srila Prabhupada remarks, there is no difference between the Lord's self and the Lord's transcendental body. The expansions execute differential activities. When the Lord, however, appears in his person as Lord Sri Krishna, his other plenary portions also join in him by his inconceivable potency called Yoga Maya. And thus the Lord, Lord Krishna of Vrindavan is different from the Lord Krishna of Mathura, or the Lord Krishna of Dwarka. The Virat Rup of Lord Krishna is also different from him by his inconceivable potency. Here it's important, inconceivable, because in one sense they're non-different, because it's him, but at the same time they're different, because the mood is here. We should always remember is that mood is always important, right? The physical is not what we're looking at, it's the mood. Because Krishna's Atmarama, he's satisfied and he's one. You've come to the ultimate Brahman realization, and it's manifest even on the pages of your. Okay, so does that make sense? So he's expanded for the living entities, and because he is unlimited, then there's unlimited expansions to interact with the unlimited living entities. Does that make some sense? So when we say difference here, we're meaning mood. It's not physically. Krishna and Dwarka and Krishna and Vrindavan look exactly the same. That's why they're called the same person. Right? Because they are the same person, but the mood's different. Because the mood's different, then everything about it is complete. Does that make sense? You have the barrister, he lives at home. So he has a complete scene around him there. Right? He has his wife, his family, his house, his furniture, his social life, everything that's just him as, you know, whatever it is, Mr. Smith. Right? So then, after that, then, but, same times, because he's not God, it's not complete, so he has to work. So then he's got to go down to the office, right? And there, at the office, then he's, what is it doing? Forget what it is. Construction or something like that. Oh, no, he's a barrister. So then, most barristers aren't Smith. Smith do other things. Right? So then, the barrister, he goes to the office, and at the office, then he's a judge. I mean, he's a judge or he's a lawyer. And there they have their own outfit, they have their own place. Everything matches law. Does that make sense? All the people there, they got their own language, they got their own mood. It's a completely different mood, but it's the same person. But in that, his mood is different. He won't interact with his family. They also have to stand, you know, behind the bench. If they want to say something in the court, they also have to say, my lord. Right? Doesn't matter. You know, the kid can't come in and go, hey, daddy, can I... No, it doesn't happen. You know, when it says, all rise for the honorable Mr. Smith, then they all have to get up. Even if it... Does that make sense? So because we aren't so powerful, means it's the same person having to do all these, but you can see as each one separate. So for Krishna, it's complete in itself. It doesn't have to, it's not dependent on the other one. Him being at home, he could be at home forever.
the same time he can be at the office, you know, at the court with all the other lawyers and that forever. Does that make sense? So that's, you know, Krishna, I think, and Prabhupada makes that point, you know, Dwarka is Krishna at the office, you know. Vrindavan is Krishna at home. Does that make sense? So it's the same person, but because the mood's different, it's complete. That mood is complete with his associates, it's the paraphernalia, the dham, the activities, everything. Same. That's why they don't have to overlap. So in that way, it's different, but inconceivably also it's the same. So we make a difference so that we can distinguish between the platforms and the rasas, but at the same time we don't make too much distinction because it is the same person. Does that make sense?
The Virat Rupa exhibited on the battlefield of Kurukshetra is the material conception of his form. Therefore, it should be understood that when Lord Krishna was apparently killed by the bow and arrow of the hunter, the Lord left his so-called material body in the material world. The Lord is Kaivalya. In other words, the material body means the Virat Rupa. And the Virat Rupa looked just like him also. Right? You know, in other words, it wasn't that the hunter came running over after shooting him and thought he had killed somebody, and then he finds this guy on the ground with thousands of arms and thousands of heads, and you know, no, he just found Krishna. Does that make sense? But it was material form of Krishna, means this Virat Rupa. Yeah? The Lord is Kaivalya, and for him there is no difference between matter and spirit, because everything is created from him. Therefore, his quitting one sort of body or accepting another body does not mean he is like the ordinary living being. All such activities are simultaneously one and different by his inconceivable potency. When Maharaj Yudhishthira was lamenting the possibility of his disappearance, it was just in pursuance of a custom of lamenting the disappearance of a great friend. But factually, the Lord never quits his transcendental body, as is misconceived by less intelligent persons. Such less intelligent persons have been condemned by the Lord himself in Bhagavad Gita, and they are known as the mudhas. Like that, the mudhas. You know. That the Lord left his body means that he left again his plenary portions in the respective dhammas, transcendental abodes, as he left his Vishwarupa in the material world. Yes, please.
I want to make a comment about the next entry. Which is a quote from Srimad Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Prabhupada 2. A citation never before seen in English, because Srimad Bhagavata Thakur has not been translated or published in English yet. And the reason I put this quotation there is because in what we just heard Maharaj speaking was Srila Prabhupada's observations on the complexities of actually what is yogamaya. That's the actual subject of what you were just reading. That. And yogamaya is...
Yeah, that's right. It's all...
Yeah. And it's very complex. And Prabhupada says, because of this yoga maya, he even says the Lord Krishna Vrindavan is different from Lord Krishna Mathura or the Lord Krishna Dwarka. But you explain nicely why that is. Under the yoga maya potency, which is governing, arranging for the mood, different moods of rasa, she's making all these arrangements. So simultaneously, there are mundane scholars who say the same thing, that Lord Krishna Vrindavan is different from Lord Krishna Mathura and Lord Krishna Dwarka. And they actually mean it. They actually mean that historically speaking, there was some king named Krishna who ruled at Dwarka, some other king named Krishna who ruled at Mathura. Then in another period, there was a Krishna in Vrindavan. And somehow, you know, due to the mixing of legends, you know, and of course the Brahmins, evil-minded Brahmins, were always looking to you know, organize Hinduism in such a way that they will benefit materially. So then these three different, I even heard them called Aboriginal kings, because Krishna means black, so
oh, they
were Adivasi type of kings. So they were written as one personality and turned, you know, it was turned into scripture, and Krishna was made into a god, etc., etc., etc. So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's comment is then addressing these same questions from that point of view. That, and it's very interesting that, you know, if we are fortunate enough to come into contact with Yogamaya, with the internal potency of the Lord's pastimes, but if we make offenses, if we don't have the right mood, that's a good point, then that same Yogamaya, she manifests for us as Mahamaya and throws us out of the association with the Lord and his devotees. And so this is actually the focus of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's comments, how to avoid falling under the influence of Mahamaya, the Yogamaya feature, or the Mahamaya feature of Yogamaya. So I could read that?
Please.
Okay. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, let all things that are favorable for the service of Krishna become the objects of our worship. Let the abomination of mundane conceptions with regard to grass and creepers, that means those things that sap energy from the main creeper, side issues,
side studies,
you know, anarthas. So let these not affect us. It is not possible for us to become liberated by our own endeavor from our present material conceptions, material endeavors, and false ego. In other words, this is a very important point, that when we come to Krishna consciousness, then we are, because it is not possible for us to liberate ourselves, we are going to bring this baggage with us. You see? Until we become purified by the process, then our own material conceptions, material endeavors, and false ego will linger on in some ways or other. So he goes on to say, Lord Krishna has said in Bhagavad Gita, Daivihyesha gunamayi mama maya duratiya, that this material nature, which consists of three modes, is very difficult to overcome. The Supreme Lord and his material energy, or maya, are two separate objects. The Supreme Lord is the absolute truth, whereas maya is temporary by nature. The temporary material conception of this world created by maya induces the conditioned souls to engage in fruitive activities. In Srimad Bhagavatam 11.19.18, it is stated as follows, an intelligent person should see that any material activity is subject to constant transformation, and that even on the planet of Lord Brahma, there is thus simply unhappiness. Indeed, a wise man can understand that just as that all he has seen is temporary, similarly, all things within the universe have a beginning and an end. In the material world, we acquire knowledge through our senses, the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and touch, as well as the mind. We try to analyze that accumulated knowledge with the help of pratyaksha, direct perception, and anuman, imagination. Actually, these attempts are the cause of our misfortune. Cultivation of Vedic knowledge, while maintaining the sense of being the doer, falls under the category of material knowledge. That's very important. Even one can try to cultivate Vedic knowledge. And this is very relevant. I was talking yesterday with a devotee who just returned from Vrindavan. and he was talking about his different discussions with different devotees who in Vrindavan have gone down their different paths, some following Babaji's, some following certain Maharaj from the Gaudiya Math, so he knows people among them. And he was commenting on how, and he himself had been interviewing a sadhu from another mat. And he said what it all ultimately comes down to is, first there's a kind of polite acknowledgement of yourself coming in as being also a Vaishnava. Yes. Then the discussion starts, and gradually the fault-finding begins. Gradually the discussion comes to trying to undermine one's faith in one's own school, and the other party is trying to establish by different means the superiority of his school. And he actually challenged this one sadhu. I won't get into the detail. The sadhu was pointing out how his school is superior because of such and such, blah, 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 blah. And so the devotee pointed out, but this such and such that you've assigned, you know, to movements like ISKCON and others as being their fault, we see historically the same thing is happening, has happened in your group too. So then the sadhu replied, yes, yes, you're right, but this is a chinja beta, a beta tattva. This you must understand. In other words, bringing in the Vedic knowledge, but just to assert in some dishonest way why his group is unique, why his group is different, why his group is the best. You see. So, if we bring cultivation of Vedic knowledge under knowledge that we acquire through our senses, eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and touch, as well as the mind, under our analysis of that accumulated knowledge with the help of prajnaksha, direct perception, and anuman, imagination, if we bring Vedic knowledge under the field of our material knowledge, then that sense of being the doer, that keeping the sense of being the doer, which also means of being, I'm the best, I'm the foremost. This, what Srila Prabhupada calls pratishta, pride in being a Vaishnava. All this sort of argument that ends up that, you know, we are the real Vaishnavas, ourselves and our group, our particular group. Then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur concludes, this falls under the category of material knowledge. It is stated in the Vedas, dve vidye veditavye paraprachiti. Any knowledge other than spiritual knowledge is mundane knowledge. It is very difficult to gain freedom from the inauspiciousness caused by mundane knowledge. There is every possibility of inauspiciousness even in the topmost planet of this material world, known as Brahmaloka, because even Brahmaloka, even Brahmaji himself does this. Even he performed a scientific experiment in the midst of Krishna Lila by hiding away the cows and the calves and the cowherd boys, putting them under nidra sleep and hiding them away in a cave for 1 year because he wanted to see. He wasn't sure, is this little boy Krishna? Is he the same Almighty Lord, the same Narayan that I worship, or is he somebody else? So then, again, relying how? Relying on eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and touch, and with the help of pratyaksha and anuman, trying to analyze the knowledge so accumulated through the senses, he tried to, in this way, discriminate between what is real and what is not. So learned persons know that this material world is temporary. All the endeavors of human beings within the 14 worlds are baffled at every moment. The conditioned souls are always put into illusion. By considering the phrase, Teju Vadim Madamyata Vinimayo, by the Supreme Lord, even the great sages and demigods are placed into illusion. As one is bewildered by the illusory representation of water seen in fire, or land seen on water, one can understand that by seeing things in an apparent way, one often fails to see the actual truth. So that's another important point, that it is Krishna, ultimately, who is placing us under illusion. Even the great sages. And it's very, very difficult to distinguish between this, what is real and what is illusion. As these examples of water seen in fire or land seen in water, mirage, naturally occurring mirages. So in other words, the point, the basic point before we get to the final paragraph, is that as long as we are relying upon our own egotistical conceptions, our own need to assert ourselves as being the one who really knows, or as belonging to the group that really knows, and yet that knowledge is simply ultimately based on false ego, then we are subject to this same process of bewilderment, which is coming from the Lord Himself. Because to assert oneself as I am the knower means to assert oneself I am Gyata is the name of Krishna, it's one of his names. He is the knower. So to assert that I am the knower, I know, I can explain everything, I've got everything figured out, is to assert oneself as God, and by doing so one is committing a great offense against the Lord. So therefore the conclusion is, unless one is favored by the Supreme Lord, one cannot see things in their true perspective. We should always consider that the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna is worshipable, and that his abode, Vrindavan, is similarly worshipable. That abode of Vrindavan is a place of Sri Krishna's pastimes. Krishna is a personification of all transcendental mellows. If out of good fortune we realize this fact, then we are sure to achieve the highest benefit. In the abode of Vrindavan, there is only one object of worship, and that is Krishna. He is served by five kinds of servants, who are all subordinate to him. So that is the Vrindavan mood. That Vrindavan is a place of service to Krishna. And everyone who is qualified to dwell there has realized himself as a servant of Krishna. And a servant of Krishna, this is how he considers himself. I'm just a humble servant. He's not going to consider himself the master, the lord, the all-knowing, this or that. The ones... We see, actually, this is a great example. We see when Srimati Radharani, whom we know is the foremost devotee, is in the depth of her lamentation of her mood of loss of the Lord. This viraha, mood of separation from Krishna. Then we see, like a mad woman, she's running through Vrindavan and she's expressing her heartfelt appreciation for the service of all the other devotees there. Because she's considering that they, the grass on the grounds, the bamboo shoots that grow up, which Krishna uses for when they mature to be his flute, the deer, the birds in the trees themselves, the flowers, the monkeys, whoever, whatever. All of that, these are all devotees of the Lord, and they are superior in devotion to her. Therefore, she's begging them, you know Krishna, you have Krishna, she's saying to the grass. Krishna, you are so fortunate that Krishna is stepping on your heads every day, blessing you with his lotus feet. Where can I find him? Please reveal this secret to me. Where is he? Where can I find him? So, in actual fact, Srimati Radharani, although we know from Shastra she is the foremost devotee, she's considering herself the least devotee of all. And therefore she's begging for the mercy of all other devotees in Vrindavan. So this is actually a great mystery for those who have not properly cultivated the true mood of devotional service, as Maharaj was reading, under the influence of the inconceivable potency called Yoga Maya, as Srila Prabhupada states.
Very interesting how just the Bhagavatam is the place of opening place. And bringing out this separation. That'll be matured in the 10th canto, but it's still immediately brought out.
Yeah.
And brought out within the context of the Mahabharata. You know, because that was so he's correcting the lack in the Mahabharata, you know, by bringing out Krishna, but even within that he's bringing out this mood of separation.
This is in the next chapter, just to like coming attractions. We'll see Arjuna's, the verses, there's about half dozen verses from Arjuna's lamentation to Yudhisthira, where he's expressing that I have lost the Lord, I was completely dependent upon him. I am the same Arjuna, I have the same Gandiva bow, I have the same strong arms, I have the same weapons, but now that Krishna is gone, I'm nothing. This is one of those verses. Then this is categorized in the Bhagavad Arkam Richimala as Prema Mahimna, one of the topmost expressions in the whole Bhagavatam of pure love of Godhead. Even though it's Arjuna, you know, and he's in chivalrous mood, chivalrous friendship, you know, this is not a lamentation of the gopis, but Arjuna really expresses himself as just in the mood here, that his whole position, his whole identity as Arjuna does not stand without Krishna. And this is significance of Yudhisthira's question. Yudhisthira's question here. Let me just find it quickly. Yes. Or is it that you are feeling empty for all time because you might have lost your most intimate friend, Lord Krishna? And Arjuna, he takes up this again and again. He's referring to the void. The void that he's experiencing within himself is like he also has no identity now that Krishna has departed.
It's like you have terms, like a husband means there's a wife. So if there's no wife, you can't be a husband. Or son means there's a father. Or father means there's a son.
This will not give away. But there's a very, very interesting solution to Arjuna's plight in the next chapter. How Arjuna recovers himself.
Coming attractions.
Yeah, definitely. And it fills out our understanding of the term Bhagavata literature. But that's all we will say. Come tomorrow and have this mystery revealed.
Same place, same time, same channel.
And it's very important, actually, because that gets into the mood of how one approaches the scripture. How one should approach it, this Bhagavad Shastra. That if, again, we approach it as self-important, masterful scholars who, with our analytical abilities, can, you know, just take everything apart, put it back together, reveal and explain, and we're masters of the subject, then you actually miss the real purpose of why a scripture, again, avoiding to name the one I'm thinking of, why a scripture was spoken, or why Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken. But it's stated in the Bhagavatam itself that in this age of darkness, the people who are find themselves bereft of the Lord's association shall get light out of this Purana. So the whole Srimad Bhagavatam is meant to be read in the mood of separation from the Lord. Then you get it.
Yeah, because when the Lord's not there, it's dark.
Yeah.
Yeah, as soon as you have the voice, I know when you'll be in AMA. It's like the moment's like 12 years. It's just empty. It's void. It's also the element of the, just reflecting on that aspect of separation. Because here Prabhupada says that, you know, the convention of feeling, you know, lamenting for a family member that's gone, that's, you know, that's the convention, that's what's done. Then, but there's that element, but there's the element of the relationship as it is progressing now cannot be manifest. Therefore, there's separation from that, the Lord in that manifestation. But he is manifest in his, you know, is it they call it, is that his name, Bhava something?
Bhava Rupa.
Bhava Rupa.
Yeah. That's it.
The Bhava Rupa. Oh, am I talking too much?
No. Oh, okay. I mean, this is very okay. Good. Now you're really getting into
it. So the Bhava Rupa
is the real thing.
Is also another manifestation of the Lord. Therefore, the ecstasy is there. The taste is there. But it's a different one. But it's just, different manifestation. So it's not like anybody else who's lost because the sense gratification or benefits you get from the other person, they make me laugh, or they make me happy, or they make me feel secure, or, you know, they're just nice, or, you know, I feel good, and like that. It's the element that how you say that as before that meaning that how you say the meaning to one's life because you're the other part of the relationship. You know, either you're, you know, some portion of the relationship. You know, like Radharani's the other half of Krishna, or her assistants are her expansion, so then they play that part in that role, you know, so that taste is there. That is not able to be manifest. So then there's that feeling of separation from that opportunity. You know, and then the Bhava Rupa is there, that it's actually Krishna and you're experiencing his association. But what gives you solace is thinking of the next situations, that being with him, you can then manifest that relationship. Because otherwise, in the Bhava Rupa, it's simply experience. But you have to look forward or look back. But because there's no time, forward is present and back is present. So therefore, you're with Krishna. So that's how the Bhava Rupa would work, that you're with Krishna, because in that, you're going to be lamenting because you'll think of the past. And then you'll be trying to find solace by looking into the future when we will meet again. But according to Brahma Samhita, there is only present. But it appears for flavor that it's past and present. So then you are directly with Krishna at that time. But you don't notice it because of the effect of Yoga Maya. You're thinking it's past or future.
Prabhupada explained that the Bhavarupa is the most intense relationship with Krishna. Because, one, the soul, in that, yes, there is a relationship, although it seems there isn't. What is being experienced by the devotee is his absolute dependence upon, or even you can, as Prabhupada once put it, addiction to. It's just this. Prayojana means need. So he's actually experiencing prayojana as need. This is why Vipralamba or Viraha is superior to Sambhoga, because
the need becomes fully manifest.
The need is fully manifest in the soul.
And prema is need. So because in Abhideya, then he's going and there'll be the, how do you say, you're not conscious of the experience. Because in aparoksha means it's experienced, but it's not focused upon. As soon as you focus on it, it's not aparoksha. And it comes out of aparoksha. So that happiness in Krishna's association can only be experienced, but as soon as you notice it, it doesn't exist. Just like the gopis, they're experiencing it, and then they go, hey, this is great. We're the most fortunate girl. It's gone, and Krishna's gone.
Yes.
But the somehow or another, that means in this avarupa or viraha, you can be fully conscious of it and experience it at the same time. So it's you get the most from it.
So that then, when one does, so to speak, in terms of lila, meet Krishna later on, then one can really more, with much, increased depth by this Bhavarupa, with so much, it's already unlimited, but it becomes even more unlimited, depth of appreciation of the opportunity to be with Krishna, rather than taking it for granted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because also the thing of is if you look at, because Krishna, in one sense, means variety is the source of happiness, so much happiness. But at the same time as Krishna being male, then that one thing can be appreciated forever. The one thing. So therefore he's expanding and tasting each one of these forever. But because he's dealing with Shakti that functions on spontaneity, or I didn't use word, not frivolity, the lack of being consistent, always in the same element, it's flickering because it's energy. So then the energy need is always, it is enhanced when there is change. Like for Krishna, he can be in that mood forever. But energy needs to experience the change to increase it, just because of the nature of energy. Does that make sense? So therefore, when the separation is there, then you appreciate the previous sambhog. And when this new sambhog comes, then it's appreciated more because it's compared to the separation. Then when the next separation comes, it's even greater, and your appreciation of the previous sambhog is
perfect. This is, I read in the purport what Prabhupada was actually saying, that Lord Krishna is the control switch of his energy. So the control switch is a static, he says, of immovable things, I mean the Himalayas. But the flow of his energy depends upon him, whether, he turns it on or turns it off, or increases it, sets the setting over here, over here. You see, he's a control board for.
Because actually, we can actually understand energy. We can't actually understand Krishna, because we're energy. How we'll understand what is Purusha? Man can't understand woman understands. Therefore, we can never, but It's like he's incredibly amazing, because he's simultaneously all unlimitedly contradictory elements, but all perfectly all happening at once. You know, is that
yeah.
means, yeah. But I guess it perfectly matches, because the feminine element is contradictory, but it's consistent in its being contradictory. You know? But so that must be the match of Krishna, who is full of all unlimited contradictions, but all those contradictions are themselves, stable. They all exist eternally. But they're all contradictions are brought together. Well, the feminine, all those contradictions are part of the nature, but they're constantly changing. You know, while Krishna is all of them at once, while the feminine is one of them at a time, or a group of them at a time, but constantly moving. So the two naturally match each other, because they're the opposite.
Yeah, and when finally the energy is dependent on the energetic, and Krishna's of his opulence is the last one that's always mentioned, is the Vairagya renunciation, which is actually, I always think of it, that's the real
key
to his being the Lord over his energy, because he can remove himself.
That's masculinity.
Yeah.
Technically speaking, inherently, there's no such thing as detachment in femininity. You can't have it, because it is by nature attached to the masculine, it's dependent. Well, the masculine means it is independent, so detachment. But because he wants rasa, still that rasa is there, so he allows himself to become involved in the attachment, so he himself actually is detached, because that's what gives him the pleasure, the difference.
Yeah.
Right? Because pleasure is in the difference, profit is in the difference. So because he is detached, he allows himself to act within the sphere of attachment, then the difference between those, he gets pleasure. And the energy is attached, and it is able to therefore, dominate the detached. So that creates the difference. And so then there's the pleasure. Because woman is not happy unless she can dominate. She can't, she feels insecure, because that connection hasn't come. But when she can dominate, then the connection's been made. The dependency is made, or is able to be expressed, because when she can dominate, then her needs can be fully manifest.
It's that exchange in the Gopal Tapa Upanishad. It's interesting how the Upanishads, you know, they're about Gyan and Vairagya.
Mm-hmm.
And so Gopal Tapani Upanishad is also about Gyan and Vairagya, but in terms of Krishna's pastimes, you know, his Madhura Leela, and that's where you've got Radharani, who's known as Gandharvika in that Upanishad. She's addressed as Gandharvika. So she and the gopis come to meet Krishna, but there's a pre-arranged meeting, but he's late. And so they ask him, where were you? And then he says, I was on the other side of the Yamuna with the great sage Durvasa Muni, who's come. He's come to visit us for a while, but he's staying in his own lonely ashram on the other side of the Yamuna. And then Gandharvika and the gopis, they think, well, we also want to see such a great sage. We also want to have darshan, go do some service. But it's very late at night, so there's no boat running. So they're so eager to go. So then Krishna says, well, he tells them that Yamuna will give you passage if you bow down and very humbly ask that in the name of Krishna, the greatest of brahmacharis, please let us go. So then they do that, and Yamuna gives them passage. And when they reach Durvas,
except the Jews were chanting.
And they reach Durvas, and they prepare a big feast for him. And They request that they can do some service. They can prepare a feast, and he says, yes, you can do that. And then they all, in very competitive mood, there's thousands of gopis, and they prepare a big pot of feast, each one of them. And each one of them wants to be the first because they think he's so skinny and, you know, sage, ascetic. So, you know, he should eat from our pot. And he said, no, you just line up and I'll eat everything. So they all lined up and he ate everything, all of it. And then they wanted to go back to see Krishna after done that service. And then he said, yes, Jamuna will give you passage if you bow down before her and say, humbly request in the name of Durvasa. Durvasa literally means one who only eats grass. Give us passage. And so they did that, and Jamuna gave them passage. And then by the time they returned, then Gandharvika, she said to Krishna, I have one question. How is this possible? The Jamuna Devi, who is giving us passage because we have stated something to her, which must be true, otherwise why should she give us passage? But Krishna, what kind of brahmachari are you to meet us in the middle of the night? And what kind of sage is he who eats only grass? We just saw him take everything. We cook thousands and thousands of pots of food. And that's where Krishna, then he explains, from his own position, his jnana and vairagya. He says, actually, I am Atmarama. And because Durvasa is my pure devotee, he is also Atmarama. So you have to understand that I, for my self-satisfaction, do not depend upon you, gopis. I do not need you to be completely satisfied. But because you come offering service, and it is myself as a lord and Durvas as a saintly person, it's our duty to receive such service offered. Therefore, we're accepting. But you must understand that within us, both of us, we're not dependent, we're not moved by it. So he explains this. And it's of all the Upanishads, that's the most nectarian explanation of jnana and vairagya you can find.
Yeah, it's interesting how it's worked in there. I think that's also where Radharani got the blessing that whatever she cooks,
yes,
whoever eats that will you know, live a long life or always be healthy. Always be healthy. Another interesting, just on the vairagya, you know, bringing out this element, continuing from before, is that the need or attraction is that it's unknown and it's unspoken. The unknown is the man, by being basically detached, that's attractive to the woman because it's actually masculine. But as Krishna mentioned there, he's willing to interact. So the detachment is not cold, tough, hard, like that. It's satisfying. It means, and if there's interaction, there is. You know, as opposed to being attached, and that's not attractive. And then you see, so that's not known. The feminine, then they also use the detachment. When the man shows interest, they show lack of interest. So the detachment. That's known, but it's unspoken about. No one talks about it. You know? And so then manifesting that detachment that creates this attraction. Because if there's detachment, then attachment's the natural, complementary mood. Then I was thinking, taking it a step further, Krishna is the all-attractive. So it's that male element that makes it both attractive for either party. Because both by manifesting it, that's the attractiveness, is it's actually Krishna, because it's his quality. Like that. And why, if the man is, not manifesting attachment, but actually is attached, then it's not attractive, because it's then you're dealing with two females. You know, so it's not interesting. You know, so it's how the energies work. It's very interesting. Like you said, the detachment is actually the key. In the Vedic culture, the Naishkarmya is the key to operating it. If you use the Naishkarmya, you'll get all material benefits and all spiritual benefits. If you don't use the key of Naishkarmya, then it slows down your benefits immensely, you know.
So, do we go through this? We're at the end of the class.
The Parashishtam. Yeah, I mean, if there's some particular, you know, that they bring something out in here. What would probably be really interesting is on each of these, because you're bringing out something very, you know, prominent, is maybe just at the beginning of it, write a little, what's the thing, Parinishta, or what's the, no, this is Parishishtam, what's the thing that we're putting at the very beginning of the whole?
Pratigya.
You put a little pratigya of each one so they know exactly why it's here, you know, and maybe just explaining its connection to the original pratigya. Because these are like out of the flow or the main.
Essay questions and answers. They should be turned in. And you need to know that our plan is that during this semester, which ends at Nisringa Chaturdasi, since we will be finishing the first canto in that time, definitely, then we will have for the full-time enrolled students who are working for a degree, there will be an exam. So, but don't have heart palpitations, because it won't be. Since we're just starting off, it's not going to be a very difficult exam. Actually, if you've been paying attention, and especially to the essay questions that you've been asked to write, then if you can retain that, then certainly you'll be able to pass the exam. Okay. Hare Krishna. So please turn in your answers to the essay questions.